It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we continue our new summer music series, Setlist. Today we'll feature Whitney Mann, a Madison singer-songwriter who shared the stage with music legends like Willie Nelson and Loretta Lynn.
First, it's time for our weekly review of state news, the Wisconsin News Roundup.
State legislators held a hearing this week on a bill aimed at banning research using aborted fetal tissue. We'll get the latest on that issue and hear what's next for the proposal.
Governor Walker was in the headlines this week after he officially signed off on the Milwaukee Bucks arena deal. We recap the details of that plan and look at what people are saying about it.
Joining us to talk about those stories and more is Robert Menser, storytelling editor for the Wausau Daily Herald. Robert, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, lawmakers gathered in Madison this week for a hearing on a bill banning research on aborted fetal tissue in Wisconsin. How did this bill come into being? Can you tell us about it?
Sure. So this is a direct response to a series of hidden camera videos that were released by a national anti-abortion activist group. So those hidden camera videos showed members of Planned Parenthood discussing fees for fetal tissue, fetal organs, which can then be used for medical research. And to conservatives, certainly to people who oppose abortion, that is seen as a moral outrage. And so there's a movement among conservative legislators to make sure that that practice is not happening in Wisconsin. There's been legislation introduced that would ban the sale or donation of fetal body parts in the state. Now it all came about as a result of this these Planned Parenthood sting videos. But Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has said that it does not sell or donate fetal tissue from its from Wisconsin clinics. So one concern or effect of the bill is going to be that it could have the effect of halting scientific research at the University of Wisconsin Madison and sort of related private sector businesses. And that is causing some legislators and a number of the Wisconsin Medical Society, the Medical College of Wisconsin, and other industry groups to, you know, either come out in opposition or express need for changes to the bill that's been introduced.
And where are lawmakers with that issue of scientific research using aborted fetal tissue?
Sure. So popular with Republicans, not so popular with Democrats, probably about as you would expect. I think there are 50 Republicans who've signed on to the proposal. At the same time, there have been Republican voices who clearly don't want to see it cause a halt to medical research, especially on existing cells. And even the bill's main sponsor, Representative Andre Jacques, said that he would work on changes to make sure that wouldn't happen. Then the sort of medical community say that they're not sure that would be the effect. So that's been cited as that it could jeopardize $76 million of work and thousands of jobs. So that continues to be a big concern. And a key figure here this week, Senator Alberta Darling, a conservative Republican senator, said she does not support the bill in its current form. So it may indicate a bumpy road ahead.
Robert, do you have any indication about whether there are other states who are considering legislation like this in the wake of these videos?
Yes, sure there are. I think the videos caused a national controversy and got national notice, and for sure I think that among anti-abortion activists and conservative Republicans who overwhelmingly oppose abortion, it's seen as a cause for action.
We're talking to Robert Menser right now of the Wausau Daily Herald for our Wisconsin News Roundup this week. And another ongoing story made headlines this week when Governor Walker signed the proposal to approve plans for the new Milwaukee Bucks Arena. And to recap, how much will taxpayers have to pay?
$250 million.
$250 million. And so how does that look to be distributed?
Yeah, so it comes from some different places. There's local aid, there is some state tax aid in it, and there is a bunch of private investment as well. So it is complicated, and even these figures are debated about over could it go up to $400 million over the course of these of this 10-year term. But basically $250 million is the agreed upon figure for the public financing of this deal. This is something that became one of the most controversial parts of the state budget, somewhat, I think, surprisingly. But it really became a flashpoint in the budget, which is why it ended up being broken out and was just passed as standalone legislation this and signed into law on Wednesday. And the reason that it was somewhat of a surprise is because almost all of the opposition to it came from the right, from Governor Walker's right. These were the most conservative members of the legislature who were in opposition. There were a lot of voices in conservative media who were speaking out against it, and the argument was, you know, should we even have public money involved in this? And are these economic projections that we're seeing gonna actually come to fruition?
And I still got to go to the Common Council, right? I mean, what do we know about what might come up then?
Yeah, I mean, that seems like I'm not in Milwaukee. I suppose I could be proven wrong, but I think it's going to be a cakewalk in the Milwaukee City Council. That's the place where probably there's the most support for it, and we saw support from Milwaukee legislators on the state level for sure. The issue is more, I mean, and I should say I write an opinion column, and I've written about this, and what I found is you can't find an economist who says that these stadium deals are actually a good deal for taxpayers. There are some economic benefits for sure, but the state of the economic research, at least right now, is that they come with a lot of opportunity costs, and that there are other, you know, almost any other investment that you do ends up getting better returns. So, you know, this is background. This is sort of what the debate was. That's all kind of over, and I think most observers expect it to easily pass, and I think they're looking to start construction this fall.
And Robert, just very briefly, interesting story about lawmakers studying the prospect of merging the two-year UW campuses with state technical college systems. What's being considered there?
Yeah, this is really interesting. The Wisconsin is actually pretty unusual in that it has these two sort of parallel systems. It has a system of 13 two-year colleges that are part of the UW colleges system, part of the larger UW system. And it also has 16 public technical colleges, which provide more vocational work and worker training and tech school. It was announced this week they're going to study this issue, and I think that everyone sees this as an enormously complex, and there's a lot of stakeholders, and it's hard to see quite how you could cram these two systems together.
And we'll leave it there as a to be continued. Robert, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
That was Robert Menser with the Wausau Daily Herald joining us for our recap of the biggest stories from around the state this week.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
As we continue our summer music series set list, we invited Wisconsin artists into the WPR studios for interviews and exclusive musical performances, which will air every Friday at this time until Labor Day weekend.
Madison singer-songwriter Whitney Mann grew up on a farm in rural Michigan before calling Madison home. Since moving to Wisconsin, she's released several albums and opened up for country legends like Willie Nelson, Loretta Lynn, and George Jones.
She recently dropped by the WPR studios to share some new songs and talk about what it's like to sit down for a lengthy backstage conversation with her favorite country artist, Loretta Lynn.
When I was younger, all that I wanted was to stand on a stage and sing. Wear your wings.
Whitney, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for playing. Well, I read that you grew up on a farm in Michigan that was pretty isolated, and I also read that you had a teacher who said that you majored in quiet. So how do you get from there to the artist who's standing on a stage singing, like your song talks about?
Yeah, I think that I just grew up, you know. I think that I was a pretty introverted kid, and I mean, I grew up writing songs and performing them or in front of the mirror in the bathroom when I was five and older. But, you know, I always had that dream of wanting to be a singer-songwriter, but when I was little, I kind of kept that to myself. And then, you know, growing up and having the ability to play in coffee houses in college and write down the emotions that I'm feeling or what others around me are going through, and then putting a story behind that and creating something. I really enjoy that part of it.
What was the road from small town Michigan to Madison, Wisconsin?
That has to do with finding a job after school. I went to the University of Michigan and I was an English major, but I got a job as a photojournalist for the Community Television Network in Ann Arbor, and loved making videos with my friends growing up and editing them in my bedroom, like tape to tape, that kind of thing. And then, so I've always had a passion for that. So after school and after 2 years at Community Television Network, I got a job as a photojournalist for the ABC affiliate in Rockford, Illinois. And that's where I met my now husband, Kyle, who was a photojournalist there too. And our paths diverged for a little bit. I went to Colorado for a little while to work there. He came to Madison. Colorado didn't seem like it was for me, or at least the city I was in, and so then I came to Madison.
You're my heart beat pounding. You're the song inside my head. You're the air that keeps me breathing. You're the boy inside my bed. You're the one who stands beside me while the rest fade into play. And when I get home, I'm home, no going back.
Now you've played solo like you're doing with us today. You've also added band members over the years. Do you have a feeling about what feels best to you as an artist, what you prefer?
I prefer the band. I think it's more fun for me to play with those guys and to hear creatively what they do with the songs or where they want to take things. And it's also a lot more fun for me to perform that way. I think it interests me, and I think that it interests the audience a lot more too. I mean, I really like writing Whitney Mann stuff alone, though, you know. I think it's a cathartic experience and kind of like, you know, people journal. Sometimes I write a song.
That old wind, it don't bother me. Cuts like teeth, but I am warm, you see. Cause I've got
you said you're an introvert. That's how you got started with your music. Obviously, part of the fun is playing in front of people, but even if you never did that, would mm-hmm. you be writing songs? Would you be playing them in the mirror for yourself?
That's a great question. Yes, I would. Yeah, I think that's a part of my DNA, you know, having that kind of creative outlet, even if it's just for myself. I absolutely believe that I would be doing it even if I weren't playing live.
So babe, you won't ever feel alone again, 'cause I've got you. And when the fire burns out and the lights go down and that coal mine bird loses her sound.
I've read that you've shared the stage, or at least opened for some of your icons, with Willie Nelson, Loretta Lynn, and George Jones. I mean, to start with Loretta Lynn, who I know is special to you, what was it like to open for her, to meet her?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I got to open for her, and then after my set, I went backstage and kind of like calmed down. And then when I came back out to watch her in the wings, she was sitting in the wings, waiting to go on, and I sat down next to her and we had a 15-minute conversation that just seems completely unreal to me now, you know? And she was super down to earth and so nice and just, like, amazing.
What did you talk about?
So the band and I played at the High Noon one year as Loretta Lynn and her band. And so we learned all the famous Loretta Lynn songs like Fifth City and, you know, You Ain't Woman Enough to Take My Man. And I told her that the band and I learned all of her songs and played as Loretta Lynn, you know? And I was like, oh, I hope that doesn't freak you out. And then she was like, honey, I've been in the business so long that nothing freaks me out anymore. And it was just adorable. And I don't know, I kind of went fangirl on her. I mean, what do you say to a legend, you know? Nothing. So I told her I read her autobiography. I don't know, it's kind of embarrassing. But I'm so happy that I got that chance.
On in a cornfield, a sea of green, 6 feet high. And when I made my great escape, dear, you were the only thing that caught my eye. Call me, oh my baby, tonight. All I want is your hand in mine. You're the most precious thing that I've ever seen.
What's it like playing, you know, in front of the crowd that's there for Loretta Lynn or Willie Nelson versus, you know, your own early maybe coffee shop gigs?
Yeah, it's actually easier.
Really?
And I don't know why. I think it's maybe an out-of-body experience, you know, that is bigger than my brain can allow me to comprehend. So, like, I think that I was always void of nerves, you know. I would just get up there and it felt like I belonged there, you know, and that's just the way I approached it. I feel like if I thought about myself as a small town Midwestern girl playing in front of thousands of people, I would have collapsed. So I think that I went in with the mindset that my songs are valid and I'm good enough to be here. And I think that's what got me through it. I don't know.
So you're from that small town in Michigan.
Yeah.
Whichever way you're performing, do you feel like you're channeling the place you grew up?
I think that old adage is true. Like, you can take the girl out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the girl, and you can't take Michigan out of the girl either, you know? So I think that all of those elements are there. And I feel like my whole life is channeling that heritage.
Now
blueprint in your mind for what success looks like for you? Because on the one hand, you're getting this taste of success opening for these big names that you've idolized, but I know you're content to sing in your bathroom in front of your mirror. So what does success mean then?
Yeah, I think that success means writing songs and finding out that people are able to connect with them. And I think that that probably means more to me than a bunch of people coming to a show and not listening. So if I'm in a room with only a handful of people and they're all into it, that means so much more to me than anything.
I need you more.
Well, Whitney, thank you so much for coming in and playing for us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All I want to do is say that you're my heartbeat.
That was Madison singer-songwriter Whitney Mann. You can catch her live August 29th at Three Brothers Farm in Oconomowoc.
Setlist Summer Music Series airs on Central Time Fridays at 4:15 through early September. For more about the artists featured on Setlist, including songs and videos of their exclusive performances at our WPR studio, head over to wpr.org/setlist. Next Friday on Setlist, we'll feature the Milwaukee rapper Milo.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
As college students prepare to head back to school for another year, many of them and their parents are probably thinking about how much that education is going to set them back. As college costs continue to grow, so does the amount of student debt in the U.S. And so far, finding a way to ease that financial burden for graduates hasn't been easy.
But our next guest says there's something we can do in Wisconsin that would be a step in the right direction and, as an added benefit, could make the state a more desirable place to stay for recent graduates. He says Wisconsin residents should be able to refinance their college loans, much like a homeowner would do with a mortgage. And there's legislation out there that could allow for just that.
Joining us now is Scott Ross. He's the executive director of One Wisconsin Now and the One Wisconsin Institute. He recently explored this idea in an op-ed for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good afternoon to you both.
So you've been looking at this college debt issue for a while. What kind of economic impact does it have here in Wisconsin?
Well, we have, I'll just tell you that there are 43 million people who have a total of $1.3 trillion of student loan debt in the United States. It's the second largest consumer debt, surpassing all other consumer debt other than mortgage debt. It's also one of the only, I think it's the only consumer debt that may have increased after the Great Recession. And we have, here in the state of Wisconsin, about 812,000 people with federal student loan debt, and then probably in the neighborhood of another maybe 50 to 100,000 who have private student loan debt. They are touting about, let's see here, about $18 billion they have in student loan debt. They're paying about $400 a month, shipping about $4 billion in student loan payments. And we think that has a real serious impact on the state of Wisconsin economy. And I'll give you two areas where that absolutely is the case. The first is in home ownership. We did a comprehensive research report of about 2,700 residents, and we found that if you have a student loan debt in the state of Wisconsin, you're twice as likely to be a renter or live with someone else, like your parents, other than owning that embodiment of the middle class, a home of your own. Same with a new car. Those who have student loan debt are twice as likely to have used as opposed to a new car. And given how important new car purchasing and home ownership is to the Wisconsin economy, I think it's no wonder that we're having trouble here. And a trouble that's parallel around the state. It happens to be a little bit worse here because we're dead last in the Midwest in job creation.
Let's key in on the refinancing issue. Why can't most student loan holders refinance right now?
Well, because it's prohibited by law. It's interesting. Student loans are treated absolutely differently than every other consumer lending transaction in the United States. And that was because back in the 1990s and 2000s, Wall Street was able to successfully strip away every single consumer protection from student loans. So, for instance, student loans, you can't discharge them in bankruptcy. They're not subject to collection owner's collection practices. And they even supersede state usury laws, usury being something mentioned in the Bible and not as a good thing. But when it comes to refinance, you don't have the right to be able to refinance your student loan, even though that's something you could do if you have a car loan or a mortgage, you know, a mortgage loan or even a credit card loan.
So is this something that the state can really do then if it currently is prohibited? Can a state law supersede that and allow refinancing?
Well, here's what they did. The members of the state legislature, led by Dave Hansen, senator out of Green Bay, and Corey Mason, a state rep out of Racine, came up with what's called the Higher Ed Lower Debt Bill. And what that would do is it would create a student loan refinancing authority here in the state of Wisconsin, where people, if they wanted to voluntarily participate, they would be able to sell their student loans back to the state of Wisconsin's student loan authority. The student loan authority then might be able to give them a lower interest rate on what they're currently paying. And it would be completely and totally voluntary. It'd be groundbreaking in the nation. And, you know, if you want to think about, like, what employ, you know, we always talk about what can we do to attract employers to the state of Wisconsin. We certainly tried it with tax breaks. We tried it with deregulation. And it hasn't worked so far. But imagine if you're an employer saying, I've got this big population of younger workers who have student loan debt. I can move my business to Wisconsin, and they can refinance their student loans so they can get lower interest rates. Well, I'm going to definitely come to Wisconsin because the burden of me providing them as high a salary as I might have to otherwise so that they can pay for their student loans, well, that might be offset by the ability, again, here in the state of Wisconsin under this bill to be able to refinance your student loans like you can a mortgage.
If you have a massive student loan debt and you can refinance it, I mean, you pay less in interest, does that make that big a difference in the long haul?
Well, I know for me, I can only speak for my own experience, and that would have been, you know, I paid student loan debt. I was a student loan debtor from 1987 to 2013. I made my final student loan payment on my 44th birthday. And I know because I had my student loans were at 7.875%. I consolidated my loans in the year 1999. Within about a year and a half, student loan rates were about 1.99%. Because I couldn't refinance that again, I basically, over the course of 15 years, paid, say I could have taken that loan from 7.875% down to 5%. Right there, that's $21,000 that I would have had to spend in the economy that was otherwise just handed out to an out-of-state lending institution.
Talking to Scott Ross from One Wisconsin Now, he says the state of Wisconsin should change the law, make it possible for people in Wisconsin with student loan debt to refinance it. So in effect, Scott, the state is taking over the loans in part to refinance. So is the state in this plan on the hook for loans that are defaulted on?
Well, it just depends. I mean, you are able to write whatever, you know, under the housing authority or under the student loan authority, they can write whatever into the loans and risk management they want to do. I mean, in any sort of system, when they had the Wisconsin Housing Authority development, there was risk management built into that. I will tell you right now that the default rate at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, for instance, is 1%. And we hear a lot about like how all these loans have been defaulted in the past, and that's why we had to take away consumer protections. The actual actual default rate for student loans is only about 11%, like nationwide. And that is a much lower rate than a ton of other kinds of loans that are already given out. So you build in the risk management, but again, they can write in whatever they want to write in terms of how those loans will be collected upon if somebody does happen to go into default. The whole point of it is to be able to do it so that people can have lower interest rates so their payments are lower and they're able to manage them, especially in a troublesome economy like we have here in the state of Wisconsin.
Are you seeing any bipartisan support from this? You mentioned Democratic sponsors.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate thing. I mean, we know from survey research that we've done that the notion of student loan reform is incredibly popular with both Democrats, Republicans, Independents. You know, over 80% of Republicans support the notion of being able to refinance your student loan like you can a mortgage. Unfortunately, for Republican elected officials, that's a different ballgame because Republican elected officials have a financial stake in keeping the status quo, that being the millions that they raise from the banking industry who are opposed to this. So right now, the student loan, the higher ed lower debt bill has all 50 Democrats on it as co-sponsors, which is, you know, an amazing accomplishment because you don't get that sort of unanimous support on a bill usually. Unfortunately, there has not been a lot of Republican support, and it's something I think we've seen paralleled in the presidential race, where it is the Democrats who are talking about being able to refinance your student loans, and Governor Walker and Marco Rubio and the rest of them dismissing that. But I guess they don't have to pay student loans. Oh, wait, Scott Walker has $100,000 in student loans. I don't understand why he doesn't want to be able to refinance that loan for his kids that's right now at 7.1% down to something more market, you know, down to something that's more reasonable and more market-based.
Now, you hinted at this earlier, Scott, and you mentioned in the piece you wrote in the journal Sentinel, you see this as a weapon against the concerns about brain drain. Is this enough of a difference that's going to keep, you know, a Wisconsin graduate in Wisconsin, or maybe lure a graduate from elsewhere to Wisconsin?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if you don't have an, if you're currently holding a loan that has, you know, say an 8% interest rate, and you can come to Wisconsin and get a 3.5% interest rate, well, you're going to go there in a second, especially because it's a great place to live. But yeah, absolutely, it is a tonic to the crisis of brain drain. Obviously, we need more. You know, we need good jobs here. We need opportunities for young people. But you know, thinking about the people who are already, you know, who already have that debt. I mean, there's, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 900,000 of them across the state of Wisconsin who are, you know, and half of whom are paying higher interest rates than they would have. There was a study done by the White House on refinancing that showed if they did a federal refinancing plan that 515,000 people here in the state of Wisconsin would immediately be able to get a lower interest rate on their loans.
We're talking with Scott Ross from One Wisconsin Now. He says Wisconsin residents should be able to refinance their college loans, much like a homeowner could do with a mortgage.
You can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea? If you're struggling with college debt yourself, is this something that you'd take advantage of if it happened? And what questions do you have about how this might work? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Scott Ross of One Wisconsin Now. To ease the problem of student debt and stem brain drain in the state, he says Wisconsin residents should be able to refinance their college loans.
There's legislation supported by Democrats in the state legislature that would do that. What do you think of the idea? Do you have questions about how it might work? Would you take advantage of this? Would you refinance your student loan debt if that option were available? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers. We've got Deb on the line in Madison. Deb, hi.
Hi there. I used to process financial aid for a school. I'm also a student loan debt holder. And one of the things that hasn't been mentioned, or a few things, are what is unique about student loan is that if you lose your job, you can contact federal student aid and you can apply for a deferment where you don't have to pay anything during that time frame. It also applies if you suffer financial hardship. You can apply for in that circumstance. And they also have income-based repayment where you can submit paperwork, and it's very simple. And they will calculate what you can afford based on what your income is. So there's an awful lot of flexibility with that loan, which I don't know would be offered if somebody chose to refinance with what the guest speaker is proposing, and a loan is also discharged upon your death. And
Deb, thanks for the call. I want to get our guest in on this, Deb, from Glendale there. Scott, student loan, she says, come with advantages. You can put off payment when you lose your job, that sort of thing. So does that balance out the inflexibility on interest rates?
I think absolutely not. And the thing is, the Student Loan Refinancing Authority has the ability to write whatever rules they want to for something like income-based repayment, which was created under, you know, which was just recently created under President Obama. I used deferment when I had some problems with employment back, 18, 19 years ago. And it's nice, but all it is it's increasing the amount that you pay over the long haul, because it's not like your loan stops accruing interest when you defer. So it might be something worth, you know, it's definitely, having spoken to the legislators who wrote the bill, they wrote it broadly so that the Student Loan Authority can create the rules that it needs to create to make sure it serves people in the state of Wisconsin, you know, the best way that it can. And so they obviously could write those things into it.
Deb, thanks for that call. We'll go to Deb in Madison now. Deb, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just tuned in, so I was curious as to whether this bill would also involve kids that went to private school where their interest rates are like charge cuts, like 12.95 or something like that. Would it pertain to them? Those debts are so high, and I just don't see a future for a lot of these kids that have them.
Deb, thanks for the call. Scott, would it apply to all forms of student loans?
Absolutely. Anybody who wanted to voluntarily participate could participate. They didn't do anything related to the kind of loans that you, this kind of student loans you have, and they didn't make any prohibitions against necessarily what your income is. And the reason they didn't do that is because, you know, for a lot of places in rural Wisconsin, they can't get general practicing doctors or dentists because they graduate with $300,000 or $400,000 worth of student loan debt and are unable to, you know, unable to go to smaller communities to be able to practice because they have so much debt. So they specifically made it all inclusive, you know, and again, you know, I would just remind everyone that this is a loan. So anybody who voluntarily participates and sells their loan back to the state of Wisconsin would pay more back than they borrowed. It just is at a lower interest rate, a more market-based interest rate. And that's one of the things I got to tell you that's been so surprising about the Republicans being unwilling to join us in this fight. And that is because it's a very market-based solution. It's not talking about throwing more money at a situation. It's not talking about restoring the $700 million in cuts to public education, you know, higher education and the tech college system that have happened under Governor Walker. It's about allowing a market-based approach where more competitive, you're able to access more marketable, market rate-based competitive interest rates. And it also includes a tax break of up to, I think the average tax break would be about $172 a year, but it could be as much as $1,000 for a couple with massive student loan, couple with massive student loan debt.
So we've got this legislation in Wisconsin, not really currently advancing. Are other states toying with similar ideas?
Yes. I mean, we've gotten a bunch of calls from different states all across the country, the reddest of red states, the bluest of blue, and the purplest of purple. So we've talked to a number of states all across every time zone who are interested in how is this bill proceeding. And I tell you what, it always comes back to the same thing. They're like, they say, what do you mean they haven't passed this? And they're like, nope, you go ahead and be the first state. Wisconsin's Republican majority is unwilling to be the first state to provide, you know, hundreds of thousands of borrowers with badly needed relief at no cost to taxpayers, and they're unwilling to do that. But yes, there is interest all over the place. And again, I think the fact that you've seen the president come out, I think the fact that you've seen leaders like Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, Mark Pocan, Ron Kind, all here in the state of Wisconsin, not Elizabeth Warren, but the other three, really have come out in favor hard and strong for being able to refinance your student loan like you can a mortgage, and they've all sponsored legislation to do that federally.
Student loan debt has come up some in the presidential race. Do you see anything happening, given the current political climate, to tackle the student loan debt issue at the national level?
Well, I think that we've seen the Democrats try to pass student loan refinancing when they were in control, and both times it was blocked by Republicans like Ron Johnson. So passing the bill is probably going to be impossible. What my hope is that you get enough people out there talking about the need to do student loan refinancing, and you get some people elected who talk about that, and then that becomes a movement where people, you know, one day student loan debt is going to be the 21st century third rail of American politics. It has almost the same population as, you know, as people who are on Social Security and Medicare, and it's only getting, you know, it's only going to rise. So I think over time you're going to see this be as potent an issue for younger voters as Social Security is for older voters.
Given that it might be a third rail issue, though, are you optimistic that anything is going to change? Anything's going to happen to tackle it in the next 5-10 years, say?
You got to think that as the Gen X and the Millennials take more hold of the voting block and power here in the state, here in the United States, that demographically you're going to have more focus be on this crisis. I mean, it is a crisis that's risen pretty quickly. I mean, in the year 2000, there was $200 billion of student loan debt, and that's, you know, obviously skyrocketed to $1.3 trillion today. So I think that something is definitely going to happen. It's just it's a new movement, so it's going to take a couple years.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you both.
That was Scott Ross. He's executive director of One Wisconsin Now. We've been talking about student loan debt. He's calling for the legislature here in Wisconsin to pass a law that would allow student loan debt holders to refinance within the state.
The Leopold Shack along the Wisconsin River near Baraboo is often seen as a symbol of the works and beliefs of conservationist Aldo Leopold. Now the Leopold Foundation is adding a memorial to mark the location of Leopold's death in 1948. Chuck Kornbach reports that the new site is also connected to another Leopold legacy, his family.
It was April 21, 1948, and as Estella Leopold, Aldo's last surviving child, remembers it, her father became aware of a brush fire at a farm near the Leopold's weekend family dwelling, known as the Shack.
And Dad was very concerned that this fire might extend up the Great Marsh toward the shack and that it might endanger our pine stands, our pine plantations, which we'd been working at for a number of decades.
Estella says the 61-year-old Aldo Leopold stationed her and her mother, also named Estella, at different locations a ways from the fire while he went off to fight the blaze.
And we were waiting to see what happened, and a few hours later, nobody could find Dad, and it turned out that he had had a heart attack and had probably carried too much weight in this darn equipment that he was using. And we're darn sorry to lose that guy, I'll tell you.
Estella says it appears her father perished at the base of a hill on land that now serves as the headquarters of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. It's at that site the Leopold Memorial is being built.
And there we go. I had a prairie dock. You had compass plant. And we got an Indian grass over there.
Leopold Foundation President and Executive Director Buddy Huffaker leads a group of volunteers and Leopold family members planting flowers at the memorial that will also include sculptures of bison. Huffaker soon stands up and reads from a plaque that will be part of the site.
Quote, "It is warm behind the driftwood now, for the wind has gone with the geese. So would I if I were the wind. Aldo Leopold."
Huffaker says it was a favorite quote of another Leopold daughter, Nina Leopold Bradley, who died 4 years ago. Huffaker says the memorial was mainly Nina's idea and that the quote is very appropriate.
She understood him and his legacy and vision for a land ethic to be simple, connected to nature, and transient, I think, in some ways that, you know, we're all here and then we're gone.
Yeah, Tess, do you remember what this plant is?
A bloodroot.
A bloodroot, yeah. Good girls.
Also quite present at the memorial on this day was Aldo Leopold's great-grandson, Jed Mounier, and his daughters. Mounier says the memorial not only tries to remember the past, but to maintain what Aldo called a thinking community, supportive of nature.
Sort of a long-term evolutionary perspective. It's part of our core being, whether we acknowledge it or appreciate it or not.
Like many other Leopolds have done, Mounier works in the sciences. Estella Leopold is an emeritus professor of biology at the University of Washington. Estella says as her father's memorial nears a formal dedication, it's now time to help instill love for nature in the next generation.
You can't fall in love with something you don't know, and if you know nature, it's very likely that it's such an intriguing environment that you'll get to love it, you'll get to like it. And if we don't have young people becoming familiar with nature, who's going to defend it? Who's going to defend it out there in the legislatures, in the boonies?
Estella Leopold is working with more of those future defenders this weekend at the Leopold Center during a conference titled Building a Land Ethic. Chuck Kornbach, Wisconsin Public Radio, near Baraboo.